Join me, Jacqueline Coley, on a brand new podcast, Seen on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that shape them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Seen on the Screen is available now. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name is Mark Ellis, joined as always by my co-pilot, really the Han to my Chewbacca. Dare I say the Leonardo to my Michelangelo, Jacqueline Coley. Here once again, how you doing?
Yes, because we can make Brian and Remsen, Donatello, and
Raphael. We definitely have a lot of Donatellos behind the scenes here at Rotten Tomatoes.
No, I agree. So good to see you again, sir. It's hot. It's July.
It's good time to be seen. It's very hot outside. I am scorching up the YouTubes right now. Thanks to All Things Comedy. The special dropped last week, Alive and Well, and you can check it out if you've not already enjoyed my new hour. Wherever you enjoy stand-up, particularly YouTube, you can just go to All Things Comedy's channel, which brings us to our guest today and our topic here, Eric Griffin, comedian, actor, host of his podcast, Riffin' with Griffin, also found on the All Things Comedy Network. We're network bros.
Yeah, I'm the Rizzoli to your Isles.
The Franklin of my batch, if you will.
Oh, my God. Are we just going to keep this only on TNT?
The Kathy to your Lacey.
Wow.
This is really dangerous getting me and EG together for a full podcast. But I feel like we have a great topic, and this is one that, you know, I always love talking about this movie because this harkens back to, I'm sure, all of our childhoods. But when you think back about the movies that you got as a kid that you got excited to go see, there was a lot of animated fare out there, and then live action crops up, and you say, oh, okay, we had a live action Batman, live action Superman, and then 1990 happened, and the dawn of a new decade brought us Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 41% rotten on the tomato meter, 81% with the audience score. So that's the movie that we're going to be asking folks, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong? I want to give a shout out to our fan, Steve Eiwerman, a member of the Fresh Ketchup crew, who said, I enjoy the episode on Super Mario Brothers from 1993. In sticking with the cartoon video game genre, what about the live action TMNT from 1990? 41% rotten, which I think is criminal. Saw it and loved it as a kid, and it still holds up today. Keep up the good work. We also have Mutant Mayhem, the new Turtles movie, coming out August 2nd. So there's a lot of turtle buzz in the air, and we figured it's time to get down to brass tacks and talk about this movie, which is not the highest rated Ninja Turtles film. Do you know what the highest rated Ninja Turtles film is? Animated or live action?
Is it Secret of the Ooze?
Animated or live action?
It's got to be the one with, what's her face?
I don't know.
April O'Neil?
No.
She's in all of them.
No.
The one with Megan Fox?
Megan Fox.
Oh, yeah. No, neither one of those. Oh. Mm. You have Batman versus the Ninja Turtles. It's an animated movie from 2019, 100%. I don't know how many critics reviewed it, but it's 100% on the tomato meter.
That's a mashup. Anytime you get a mashup, you know.
I'd say, tell you can't that
have,
to Alien
You can't have Rizzoli
Predator.
Without Isles.
I think Alien versus Predator would beg to differ on that one.
No, that one. Oof. That
was
terrible.
So excited.
And I'm so excited for that.
Me too.
I'm like, they're finally going to do this.
That might have been when we met. We were probably outside of a comedy club talking about this weekend, man, it all goes down.
Yeah, because that was one of those ones that, like, it took so long for them to make, but they were teasing it for like
forever.
20 years.
You had the Dark Horse comics in the 90s, which were really good. And, like, we both love the individual franchises. Mm-hmm. How can that miss?
You know what it is? Sometimes it's this is a great, you'll love this example. Sometimes a movie has a great concept, but they didn't follow through. You know what's a great example of that? In Time with Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Okay. Like that. Didn't think we'd talk about that today, but we are.
I'm saying that's a great concept for a movie.
It is, yeah.
Right? Like, it could actually be a great HBO, well, not HBO, Max show now, or just some Max. Kind of, just Max, whatever. It'd be a great show now, you know, or like Silo on Apple TV. It's like just a great like little show, but then they just didn't, you know.
Yeah, the log line was there.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
Yeah. I'll raise you that Olivia Wilde movie that didn't meet expectations.
I was going to say, I think she was in
with
that.
Don't Worry, Darling. The directed Olivia Wilde movie that's a great pitch.
Okay.
That, I mean, White Women Get Out. Like, that's a pitch.
Yeah.
That's a pitch.
I'd buy it.
And I would watch it. And then it did not end up being that.
It was really weird.
If you pitched to anybody in okay, let's go back to like the late 80s and say, okay, hey, my kids love playing with these turtles that are toys and it's based on comic books. Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, I think I want to do a live action version of this. Does the board laugh you out of the room or do they say, oh, no, maybe we can capitalize on this?
You know... Are we going to talk about the movie now?
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Because I have a lot of things to say.
God, I love when a guest comes fully loaded, ready
I mean,
to go.
Seriously.
Let me simply ask you this. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about the 41% tomato meter?
Yeah, they're very wrong because it should have been way lower.
What?
The movie was terrible.
Oh, my good Lord. Wow. I can't believe this.
Locked and loaded.
Yeah, terrible.
This is turtle slander.
But I will say this. I have the reason I think that I'm saying that is because of like our knowledge now. It'd be like looking at that one of those first Spider-Man movies. And I'm not talking about the Tobey Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, remember when they tried to do Captain America, Spider-Man, way. You know what I mean?
They have like
Captain
an Avengers
America
movie.
89.
Yeah. Okay. And you know that you could see the, you know what I mean? It's like, that's what was up with this movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to like take off the prism of
what
we know now. And when you watch that, like to me, like that movie could have been called like, you know, Teenage Ninja Turtles, you know, Electric Boogaloo. You know what I mean?
If it was
a musical, it would have been better. You know what I mean? Like if they would have all of a sudden started to go doom down, doom down. You know,
it's arguably the best MC Hammer soundtrack in movies. And that's said with all due respect to the Addams Family, which is also great. But the Addams Family might be a better movie, Jacqueline.
Very
but MC Hammer
so.
Came to play. Did the Turtles? Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong?
It's so interesting too because it goes from MC Hammer to Vanilla Ice in the next one. What do we do? No, I do think the music definitely hit hard on this. This was so weird, like, looking back on, like, this movie, just how it opens. It is so built in the, like, scare white people about New York 80s. Like, it was so set in that, like...
It was like a bad play.
You know what I mean?
Before Giuliani got there.
I mean, it was just so weird. And what we've come to learn now is, like, so much of that was because of these movies. It wasn't really based on reality that there was this, like, huge... There was definitely a crime influx in the 80s, but it wasn't... You would have thought that you can't walk down the streets of New York without being stabbed.
It terrified me. As a kid, seeing this movie, we had gotten out of the Air Force, so we were in Virginia when I saw this movie. But yeah, like, going to New York, like, the opening of this movie is just a bunch of kids pickpocketing back and forth, and it turns out they're members of the Foot Clan. But the movie itself, are you happy with 41%?
I would say the 41% is an accurate reflection of how bad this movie is at times. But I had so much fun with it, I can't really call it a 41% movie. And it's still, it's a kid's movie. What was weird with it is this is back in a time when kids' movies could be dark. I mean, this is before, I think, even Kindergarten Cop, right?
Like, Kindergarten Cop was around the same time. I think Kindergarten Cop might have gotten there first.
First. So this was still around the time where they would still hide, like, kids' movies with this, like... I mean, look, Secret of the NIMH, that thing should have been R-rated. You know what
That's
I mean?
Like, scary.
You know, Return to Oz. This was a part of that time frame where they wanted to scare kids before they
You talking about Oz on HBO?
No, or? Return to Oz, the Firouza Ball.
Okay,
Firouza
Ball. That would be really scary. Yeah. Trick too.
So,
Return to Oz.
It would be the
that
kid,
would be
like,
so bad.
Trying to watch
that
HBO
would be
at night.
So
yeah, like you're trying to see like a movie that's nudity, but then Oz comes on. It's like, I want no part of whatever.
Oh
Oz
my God.
I'm not ready for it.
That is so bad. Anyway, so I would say that for what it is, the 41% is accurate, but I just don't think it's a reflection of what the movie intends, could be, and who it's for. Who it's for, it's an easy 60. I would put it in there.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. This is a fresh movie. This is a fresh movie, adult or child. Either this is, you can have a ball watching this movie.
Yes, you can have
everybody comes to play.
It's one of those ones.
Great villain, great heroes, great sidekick with Casey Jones and April O'Neil. A little bit of love story there, some intrigue.
This is a bad version of Big Trouble in Little China.
I'll take a bad version of Big Trouble in Little China.
Like as if Big Trouble in Little China didn't know what it was. That movie is just another camp madcap adventure type movie.
And blasphemy! How dare you?
Listen, it, like that whole like Little China dark underworld, like it's the same thing with Total Recall. All of y'all are doing theater camp with sci-fi costumes. I'm so sorry.
And three.
You know what I mean? Like, just I love what Elias Koteas is doing this. Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes is definitely wrong, but I want to say this. I cannot call this a good movie. The cinematography, the acting, the set choices, the plotting.
Keep going.
It is a trauma-style movie.
Acting.
But I dare you to tell me that I didn't live for Toxic Avenger.
I got some good stylistic choices that this film made. But we'll talk about that in movie talk. Right now, yeah. Jacqueline, it is your duty to tell us what this movie's about. What's the synopsis of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I mean, have you watched an episode of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Because it's pretty much the same.
We open in the 1980s,
and basically we are trying to find out what is happening in the dark underworld of New York City. We have investigative reporter April O'Neil, who is on the, back when we believed news reporters could actually discover something, investigative journalist, she is sort of venturing into the dark world, and she gets rescued from the Foot Clan by these sort of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that are living Yes, not sort of. Well, they are not actually. That's just the name we call them. They don't call themselves Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They just call themselves Turtle Freaks kicking ass.
Which they are. Yeah, I mean.
Okay. She gets rescued by them, meets all of these various characters. The Foot Clan, which is head up by Shredder. We have their master, who was radioactively made, just like the rest of them. There was an experiment, the ooze. It turns them into the turtles. Master Splinter, who is a rat, trains them in the way of Taekwondo. They all have various weapons. They are led by Leonardo. And between them, with April O'Neil, they try to bring down Master Shredder. Along the way, we also meet Casey Jones, played by Elias Koteas, who gave us what I would like to call line cook energy before we all understood what that meant. This man walked so that Jeremy Allen White in The Bear could run, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
The same energy. He just has much better Taekwondo skills.
I never drew that connection.
Mad Cat Adventures ensue.
There are nerds listening right now that are just like, I'll keep going. You know what I mean?
Get deeper into this world.
This is like a nerd 976 number. She's like, do you want me to tell you about the Ninja Turtles, baby?
Call the hotline.
Yeah. It's like,
can you tell me a little bit about Transformers from 2007, please?
Yeah. Well,
you know what? I could continue, but honestly, that's the best ending of that synopsis that I will ever get. It goes downhill from here. Yeah. Watch the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on the animated series and the comic books before that.
Yeah.
And you basically have the good guys are the Turtles, the bad guys are Shredder and the Foot Clan.
Okay.
And
there's other people. I didn't even get into like the other various characters, but like I said, thank you for that. I'm too embarrassed. Like the cheeks are red, ladies and gentlemen, and I am a black woman. I'm going to stop.
That's what really gets it. That's why the nerds are like on.
Here's the thing, though.
All right, let me put some context to why I feel this movie was, you know, terrible.
All right, wait.
Hold on.
Because
we
got the critics first.
Yeah. Oh, the critics?
I want to hear from the critics. These are critics.
Critics!
In 1990, when this movie came out, we're going to hear from the critics for our segment, 2 Minutes with Tim. Tim Ryan, take it away.
2 Minutes with Tim.
At this point, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are a pop culture institution, beloved by several generations of children, including my 8-year-old and his friends. So it's easy to forget that at the time when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie was released in 1990, there was more than a little concern about the turtles' influence on kids. The criticism came down to two main issues: the level of violence in the video games and TV series, and the utter ubiquity of the turtles as pitchmen for products directed at children. And let's face it, there's not nothing to that. The Turtles did get in lots of fights, and they were in a lot of commercials. Of course, kids were substantially less concerned about that stuff than either their parents or newspaper pundits. But it does partially explain why a lot of grown-up film critics were less than enthused about the movie. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is rotten at 41% on the tomato meter with 54 reviews, and it has an 81% audience score. And FYI, rotten it may be, but it's the best-reviewed Ninja Turtles theatrical release to date. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune wrote, "The cynicism of the motion picture industry will be apparent to any child who is exposed to the many product plugs for a nationwide pizza delivery company." However, in a fresh review, Richard Harrington of the Washington Post wrote, "Truth be told, there's something amusingly surreal in watching these happy-go-lucky, man-sized terps engage in full-scale punch and kickouts with the inevitable villains." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is exactly as advertised, one-liners, brawls, and general silliness. Good for the young at heart, irritating for everyone else. So that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Cowabunga.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Thank you, Tim. That was a great recap of how people were feeling in 1990 when the Turtles were a new phenomenon. And full disclosure, before this show, I wanted to do some sort of wardrobe nod to the Turtles. I put this on. This was not my shirt in wardrobe, but this looks like a shirt that any 10-year-old would wear.
Yeah.
So I wore a 10-year-old kid shirt for the show today.
Oh, and I'm wearing that's Barbie, how old I was. So we are really just...
Barbie.
And that's from 1990, your shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, Frying Trading since 1990. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Oh, look at that. It says 1990.
I mean, this was
destined to happen.
Serendipitous.
Let's get into movie talk. Hit the music, Brian. All right, so it feels like Eric has a lot of criticisms built up about this movie. Before we get to your notes, what were you doing in 1990? Were you?
I was graduating from high school in 1990.
So were you already the Turtles are for kids, I'm an adult now?
I was never into the Turtles. I was He-Man, Voltron, Thundercats.
There you go.
Robotech. That was my thing.
Yeah, every kid has their drop-off point. Yeah. Mine were Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So the Turtles were like the last of like the new sort of phenomenon in a toy that I would hang out, like play with. And then the Power Rangers came out and I was like, I think it's time to become an adult.
No, I was definitely a Power Ranger kid. I was actually past that because I want to say...
Ooh. Were you a turtle kid, though?
I was a turtle kid, but it's weird because girls are different because we had, like, Bratz.
And you had Barbie.
Yeah. I had Barbie longer than I should have.
Did your Barbies ever make out with the Ninja Turtles?
No, they made out with Kens and G.I. Joes.
That's fair.
I was about to say, I was also a G.I. Joe person.
Yeah, they made out with G.I. Joes for sure.
But then, you know, they took G.I. Joe off the air because it was just a big commercial for... The
cereal
stuff.
Yeah.
No, for Desert Storm?
Yeah. No, just for... No, it was a commercial for selling products.
Yeah.
And there's a law about that.
Oh, really?
So they took G.I. Joe just off the air because of that.
Really?
It's like you're hitting,
on
the nose.
Can we get some verification of that?
Maybe. I do know there's a rule about how much you can sell to kids on air.
Yes,
and I think it's a timing issue. Like the reruns of G.I. Joe is probably the issue.
Oh, wow, really?
No, it was just that the whole cartoon was...
Just an advertisement.
G.I. Joe.
Oh, wow.
I just remember like watching the Turtles on the animated show, which is how I came to them. And my little brother was like obsessed with the Turtles. So that's kind of how I got into them. But like I just remember watching their lifestyle and thinking like, that's awesome. Like, if you forget that they're living in a literal sewer for a minute, they did the most they could do with their sort of bachelor pad underground that they had, this subterranean living quarters. Mm-hmm. They got to eat pizza all the time. They put a bunch of ridiculous toppings on pizza, which I tried myself, and it was really the pizza is probably why I enjoyed this movie.
This.
Dude, I love the Turtles, and I was like, they're cool, they're fun. Michelangelo's a party dude. Leonardo's my favorite because he was kind of like the leader, you know, but I was rooting for all of them with the possible exception of Raphael, who I think is a cancer. He's a locker room cancer.
Wow.
And he literally is the reason why we're going through all of the steps in this movie is because he made a rash decision on his own instead of working inside the infrastructure of the team.
I couldn't tell you who was who.
Raphael is the one that has the size.
I told you, it wasn't my...
He's got the, you know, the thingies that look like this. Like
he's got the size. He's basically Antonio Brown. Like, he'll play with you for a little bit, and then it just completely goes off the rails.
Okay, I disagree, because when we were doing this, I don't know whose episode, where I broke down, like, the mythology behind each of the Turtles and why they have their weapons.
Yeah, right.
You can't just have blind soldiers. you do need the one person who is going to be the naysayer in any group, because once out of every 10 times, that's the person that knows. No, that's some shit. Like, it's right. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just have everyone be like,
that's why they were a cohesive group.
Yeah.
I balance each other out. He's trying to express himself. But at some point, you got to realize we have to stop the Shredder and the Foot Clan before I get my little proclivities out of the way. Yeah,
but you also have to
have
a plan.
If Leonardo's coming up with a plan, and Master Splinter are coming up with a plan.
And basically, by your logic,
why am I on an island here?
You should be on an island because nobody is above somebody at least testing the tensile strength. I think it's great to have somebody like Raphael in your group because you know as a leader, if you're going to bring something, you have to get it past this guy because he's not just going to just be the person like everyone else, like Michelangelo, to go with it. You need that locker room guy sometimes, dude.
You're selling me on that a little bit, but Raphael puts the teenage in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And he's doing exactly what he should for his age.
He's the one that's like really struggling with puberty to keep up with the other kids. All right? So, but they all form a team. Yeah. And I think Master Splinter is marvelous in this movie as the Yoda, the Mr. Miyagi, if you will. And I love that there's a backstory between Splinter and Oroko Saki, who turns into Shredder, where they have this like, oh, wait, we knew each other back in Japan when I was a rat practicing my ninja moves in a cage, because that's what rats do. And then he gets a mutagen on him, and he becomes this like kind of humanoid rat thing, and he can kind of go toe-to-toe with Shredder as far as like the mental wits go. But then you need your turtles to defeat Shredder's army and then Shredder, including Tatsu, who's a great number two.
Yeah.
So there's a lot stacked against the Turtle Boys. What I'll tell you, one of my favorite scenes of this movie, then you guys can kill it to bits if you want. I love the scene when we meet Shredder for the first time. Because it's like all the Foot Clan is like this underground, like kind of fight club looking thing. And incidentally, that was the same set that they used for Super Mario Brothers, Manhattan Town.
Really?
Or whatever. Yeah.
Of course they did.
The introduction of the Shredder is so scary. He walks in and it's like he's doing an HBO stand-up special in like 2001. Like just this like really cool, hyper-stylized, futuristic looking place. And he just gives them this pep talk for the ages. And like they're ready to run through a brick wall for this guy. So that's why I love Ninja Turtles. And Casey Jones kicks a lot of ass.
I was going to say, that's going to be my scene. But what's your favorite moment from it?
Do you have a favorite moment?
No. Do you have a moment that you didn't, like, hate it?
No, it's not a good movie. You
know? Okay.
Well, it's hard for me to watch this movie because, again, context I was trying to give before is this was 1990. Jurassic Park came out.
In 93, yeah.
93. I'm saying, but that's around the era they were working on.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't think that, like the vision was fully realized until JP hit?
No, yeah. I mean, this is like, this looked
You're
like...
You're saying the graphics of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm trying not to look at it in a sense of like what we look at now, but this was like Sesame Street.
But this is what's so funny when you see
you
know when
it,
you
it's
see,
a fine line, I'll give you that.
This is like Sesame Street, and they're like, oh, hey, buddy. How you doing? Oh, you know, it was just like really bad. And I couldn't get past it. I tried to watch it because it was coming on this. I was like, nah, I can't do this. And acting so bad. Like it doesn't hold up.
It you is really the think Elias it was the
Henson,
was bad?
Jim Henson's company did the costumes and stuff. So there is some Muppet Sesame Street connectivity.
Well, there you go.
Between the look, yeah.
But then when they got rid of Jim Henson, it was awful. So, like, I hate to say that because I liked this one. Because
oh, I got a story about that.
If you've seen the other ones where they have the mouths moving, they don't even match. At least with this one, there's, like, real animatronic people trying to make it as realistic as possible. I think it's good.
But our eye...
He's literally, for those listening, pulling down his eye.
I always think of this is when the world changed. The world changed when that dinosaur came on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And everything before it that was trying to be anything like that ceased to exist.
It's just like, it's like, nope.
Right.
I can't. I saw Jurassic Park in the theater 9 times.
Yeah. Mm. It was a formative experience.
That moment of that, you know, when everybody's looking and you're just like, what? You know, so now I can't unknow what I know.
Yeah.
So when those turtles came out, I was like, I'm good. You know what I mean? I'm good. I'm out.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Because all I saw was like, you know, I couldn't get past like all in my mind. I saw it was like, okay, cut. And then it was like, you know, a dude going,
sweaty,
sweaty. And he's like, he's got a cigarette. He's like, we're going again. When are we going again? Are we going again? He, it's not even his voice because they just, you know, it's just a dude, like some like grip.
Yeah.
But there was no attraction to the personalities of the turtles either.
I'm trying to tell you, I wasn't a turtle guy. You know, like I said, like I collected comics. So, you know, I was into like, you know, Marvel and DC stuff. And, you know, like I say, Thundercats, He-Man, Robotech, G.I. Joe. That was my thing. You know, this was like, I'm like, what? They're turtles? You know, I just, it didn't grab me because I was at a certain age where I was like, this isn't what you're looking at anymore.
No, it's
that's for kids. You know what I mean?
It's also like the age that you saw it probably. Did you watch it in the theater?
I don't even remember. I doubt that I did because I wasn't into Ninja Turtles.
I did. I was 10 and my brother was 8 and my mom took us and we lost our goddamn minds.
Because, of course.
But here's the thing though, and it's interesting you bring up like when we were growing up in the 90s, like you, because back then the comic books and the other sort of media you had, like the animated shows, and even you just playing with your toys, that could take a story so much further than what was capable on screen.
Right.
Going to the Jurassic Park thing.
Our
right?
imagination.
Right. So I think for me, and again, having 10-year-old eyes on it helps, and the fact that I just discovered movie theater nachos the previous year thanks to Batman. Eating nachos, and then knowing I'm going to get pizza right after this because the turtles are eating pizza, and then also seeing them on screen in live action, I think, was the closest thing to what we would eventually get with Jurassic Park up to that point. And so I think that's why I was like, this feels real to me because it's the closest to reality that you could have something like that look back in 1990.
Well, when you're young and like that's a very important note there.
Right.
Like, you know, like because I'll tell you my most influential movie experience. Okay. Like my mom comes to me and says, we're going to the movies. Right.
Okay.
And I'm like, I don't want to. She goes, we're going to go see Indiana Jones. And I'm like, what? I'll never forget this. I'm like, I'm just pouting. I'm so upset.
I imagine like little baby Eric, but he's still got the gray beard and the hat. And like,
I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like, are you kidding me?
I'm sorry. That image is just going to is nightmare fuel. I don't mean to be mad about this, but just imagine a like 50-year-old man with like the beard.
A little
like,
baby Herman.
You're like, that's exactly what I was thinking of from freaking Roger Rabbit.
Yep. So I'm like, I didn't want to go.
You didn't want to see any of it.
I didn't want to see this crap.
Yeah.
I didn't know who Harrison Ford was.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is a nightmare. I'm with my mom and her friend.
Embarrassing.
You know, it's embarrassing.
And they want to go for Harrison Ford because he's pretty.
Exactly. It was that kind of thing.
What if my friends see
me? I got to tell you, when I left that thing, I wanted a hat, a whip, a leather jacket.
Fair.
And I was running around my house. And then for a long time, when I was in a plane taking off, I would be looking out the window, and that music would be in my head.
Oh yeah, wow. The map, you're on a world atlas with the red dots
and
showing where you're going.
So what I'm saying is like that was my. So when I, you know, so I see the turtles, I'm like, that's not Harrison Ford, and then you know,
but it is for little kids.
No, I get that. But I'm just telling you my little kid experience. So it's like I have two movie experiences that one, and then my mom took me to see Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember seeing Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. But Return of the Jedi was the first time THX sound was, that's the first time. So we're all in the theater and it's like, ooh, and it's like, oh my God. You know, then
especially the beginning of that movie where you hear Darth Vader breathing in surround sound.
Yeah. Dude, and then like, so again, when you watch the production of Star Wars, the production of Indiana Jones, and then I see this crap.
There's no way to follow it, is what you're saying.
Fair. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just like, you know, it's like you're looking at them, you're like, that's a suit. I mean, and I was at an age where that's a suit. It's, you know what I'm saying? This is, are we at Disneyland?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're at an age where you go like, I wonder who's in the Mickey suit. That's what it was.
Did the suits bother you as a kid when you saw it?
No, but I get what you're saying about the suspension of disbelief. I do believe when movies hit you at a certain age, your ability to suspend disbelief is less. I have a feeling after this, you know, what you're dealing with right now, if you're like on the, I feel like everybody has different points in your life where you can see things differently.
Yeah.
Like you can see things differently if you're had kids. Like you can see it through your kids' eyes. Boom. You can see things differently if you've been in a love and had your heart broken. The next time you go see a rom-com, that stuff hits harder. I think a 20-something-year-old dude, this movie is just not going to hit you in a good place.
Yeah, like, well, what was it? It was 1990. Yeah, so I was like 17, 18. Yeah. I'm playing basketball. You're already done.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
Gonna hit
this
you,
was
yeah.
not going to be my
it
thing.
Makes, I'm like, you just seem like you could suspend disbelief about some things, but I think they hit you at the wrong time.
You were me when the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers came on the scene. Because to me, that show and then like the movie and like all that other stuff, it looked so just corny. Like,
just
and
like people
and
in tights.
Like barnyard play kind of, you know.
Lizzie McGuire. That was when I first realized I had aged out of Disney. By the way, the thing I was into way too late was Sailor Moon.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because I was really into Sailor Moon.
You go to Comic-Con, so you're going to see a lot of people in a Sailor Moon
show. I mean, but it was like Sailor Moon back when it was like playing cards, and you like bought Sailor Moon like sort of like kabuki stuff because that was like the only stuff we could get here. So I like had all this Sailor Moon merch. Mm-hmm. Shout out to my friend Annabelle who turned me on to Sailor Moon in summer school.
There you go.
You know, it's like I often wonder like it must be so much harder for people to suspend their disbelief now.
Mm. Because they're spoiled?
No. It's because we are also more aware of things now. Like, I'll tell you, like Superman, DC, when they started to have this thing where, like, Superman had a trial, and they were like, you, like, destroyed the city, bro. You know what I mean? Like, can we talk about all this destruction? Now when I watch like a Fast and the Furious movie and the inevitable gas truck is on the freeway, which I don't know why a gas truck is always driving on the freeway during the
is that where your head and your heart go?
Yeah.
Is to that poor driver?
Yeah. Because the gas truck blows up.
Same
and
thing.
I'm thinking so now I start doing like this. I'm counting doing a chase. I go, dead. Dead. This dude's dead.
Yeah.
So and now all the random people too.
So now in my mind, I go, like in this last Batman with Robert Pattinson, you know, he goes and chases the Penguin. They blew up a freeway. how was the Penguin just walking away from that?
The cost of human life.
You know what I mean? So you just go, now we go, oh, I can't just suspend my disbelief because you've introduced this into our world. It's like now when you're watching Marvel movies, and it's like a Thor movie, and aliens are coming. You're in your mind like, where's Iron Man?
He's somewhere. Yeah,
he can't just, they just looking at the TV, Iron Man looking at the TV like, oh, you got it, Thor. No, it don't work like that anymore. You have introduced a reality into this thing now.
He's on the recliner like, watching KTLA like, I think Thor's got this.
Yeah.
He's just I'm tired.
Pepper, don't even bother with a suit. Thor's got this.
So what I'm saying is like, so that's the kind of thing where you go, you know, back then it didn't matter. Like there is a sort of like numbness to violence and things like that people had before. But the more like realistic people you want to get, it's like, I want to suspend my disbelief. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like when I go see John Wick, I love John Wick, okay?
Yeah.
And I can I believe John Wick can kill 400 people in you know, he kills about 100 or so people a movie.
It's good stats.
Okay? It's ridiculous. I'm fine with that. But when he falls from a two-story building.
Oh, yeah.
And lands on a car. I'm out! Okay? Can he beat up 10 ninjas? Yes.
Okay.
Can he hit every shot with his gun? I believe it.
But
I don't believe him falling from a two-story building and landing on the roof of a car and then getting off of it like this.
Just shaking off some glass.
So what I'm saying is like, all right, so you look at the prism of a child looking at that movie. Because, like, you know, when you take a little kid to Disneyland and the Mickey Mouse character comes over, they're, what's in their head? They're just like, oh, my God, it's Mickey.
They lose their minds.
They lose their minds. But as an adult, you're just looking at this poor idiot.
You know what kills it for me?
Hot-ass suit.
When I meet Mickey, or like when I was a kid and I met Mickey, what killed the whole thing for me was I was so excited to like meet Mickey. And I think I shook Mickey's hand. And to feel that it was just like an adult hand in there, I was like, this is not Mick. Like, yeah. What the hell? Who's... Yes. Who stole
Mickey's
essence?
Oh, yeah, because you do feel their hands, yeah.
But the thing is, you can't unknow that.
No. It's in
so
there now.
So now your mind unravels.
Yeah.
And it's like the curtain. You know, you see that. You're looking for the Wizard of Oz, and you're like, oh, no.
I'm just gullible. I believe it all.
Okay, so here's the thing with the turtles, though. And the thing to, like people getting injured and like, watching a Fast and Furious movie. I remember seeing Need for Speed a few years ago. And there's, like, 1,000 cops that die in that movie. And all they're doing is their job, chasing after these guys that are speeding. Yeah. And, like, all the cops are dead. So... But with Ninja Turtles, I think that because I saw that movie when I was 10 years old. And as we know, 10-year-olds are pretty able to, well, you can heal from anything when you get injured as a 10. You can jump off the couch. You can jump off a bunk bed. You can do whatever. You can wrestle with your brother in the backyard. You're never going to be seriously injured, it feels like.
Don't try this at home, kids.
And then you have that first injury where you're like,
Mark Ellis said I could jump off the couch.
Oh, my God.
That's what the Ninja Turtles taught me that I could do. But I do, because I don't remember any of that stuff that Tim was talking about with, like, the parents being concerned about the violence in Ninja Turtles.
I don't remember that.
The worst influence I think the Ninja Turtles had on the youth of America was that you can like, be in shape and do martial arts and eat nothing but pizza. They never saw a vegetable, never saw the inside of those turtles' bodies.
They also have shells. So, like, are we really trying to figure this out? Like, the shells alone makes them like.
They have pecs and they have abs.
Maybe they're so fat they can't get the shells off.
Oh my gosh. I do remember that. And the reason why I remember that was because of the sequel. Oh my God, y'all.
No, the sequel has great pizza in it.
No, but the pizza has a great sequel in it, but it's also less. It doesn't go as hard as the first one. And that was a direct correlation to the first one being such hard PG-13, because it is still PG-13, even though it's like a hard PG-13.
You see blood at the end of it, because they basically punch Shredder off a building into a garbage disposal thing, and Casey Jones hits the button to, like, shred the Shredder, and so then you see all this blood.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, this guy really went through some stuff.
And
it was a little like Temple of Doom, where it's like, I didn't know that we could get that violent with a movie like this.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention this, because you mentioned about favorite scenes, is that you mentioned the Splinter sort of intro, but Shredder also has an incredible intro. I was talking about the Shredder intro. But also, Casey Jones also has a great intro.
Great intro.
That's what I'm saying. I think all of the characters, to a certain degree, and even Splinter, when you first encounter him in the in the sewer, like the way they come into him and how he sort of like gathers them all together after you just witnessed them all do this badassery, the fact that they all get in line with Splinter, I think is also a good thing. I just want to say, I think the movie gets character introductions right because it's the Wild Bunch. You have to make sure, it's like the Magnificent Seven. You got to make sure every single character.
That's why Raphael was able to do his stupid stuff.
You know,
I get it. He's necessary. I will say this about the movie. It doesn't showcase turtle health care in the best of lights because Raph gets into a fight with a bunch of Foot Clan because, again, he's a rogue now and he's on his own, and he gets killed he gets pummeled to within like an inch of his life. So the turtles' plan to save Raph isn't like, let's just expose ourselves and take him to a hospital. They take him to some place in like upstate New York. And it's this like old house, and their plan to rehabilitate Raphael is they dump him in a bathtub and hope he wakes up.
Yeah.
So half the movie is just a dead turtle in the tub, and they're in the other room like playing board games and like practicing martial arts.
Yeah.
And then eventually Raphael, thank God, wakes back up. Would have been really awkward if he just kicked it right there.
The movie I want to see is like, you know, it's like it opens up in New York, and it's like.
I like this narration you're doing.
And then it's like, you know, interior. And then it's
the sewer.
Like, it's the turtles, like, you know, they're 48.
You already sold me.
And it's very much like John Wick. You know, people come, are you guys back in it?
Jesus, God.
Like, I can't even get into my...
Call me a Domino's and I'll think about it. Yeah, I heard they got an app.
Like, I can't even get into my shell. They open up a closet, you know, and then his wife is like, are you getting...
You better not be putting that bandana on.
You better not be putting that
what shell
can
I
you
get?
Find my super shell?
Yeah, it's like The Incredibles, exactly.
Where is my super suit?
Oh my gosh.
So then it's like, you know, them like trying to like do it again.
That's the movie you want to see? Yeah, is is that what Mutant Mayhem is going to be? It's going to be them in their middle ages?
Yeah.
I just trying to hold down a job?
Yeah, because I'm trying to get work. So I can tell
you're probably not excited for this one.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I think the animation looks like, I don't like stuff that looks like super artistic. Is that we're supposed, like that's going to last about 2 minutes. We're going to be like, ooh, then it's going to be like, what is this?
I mean, I would say, I just feel, look. Either his writers or his producers or whatever, I think Seth Rogen at least usually knows how to make a comedy vehicle that is somewhat enjoyable.
Well, yeah, what was the one, the hot dog one?
Sausage Party.
Sausage Party, yeah.
Like, which is, to me, was, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just to me, Sausage Party was like a bunch of him and his friends smoking weed.
Lots of it.
Yeah. Lots of it. And somebody said, what if we made a movie? No, they had like a hot dog right here. It was like, what if that sausage talked? And then they were like, I bet you I can make that movie. It was like Trading Places. I bet you a dollar. I bet you a dollar I can make this movie and make it a hit. And they were like, okay, Steph. You know, and he was like, okay. And then cut to it. They're at the premiere like,
yeah, right. We all got to do voices.
I can't believe we made this movie.
Isn't that half the movies that got produced by like Happy Madison and anything from SNL? Like all of that stuff. It's just.
But that one was so.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I'm just saying, I think comedians getting stoned saying, let's make a movie is half of the half of Hollywood comedy.
You don't see
comedies.
A lot of it get greenlit as much as you used to, which is why I was happy to see, you know, our buddies Bert Kreischer and Sebastian Maniscalco both had movies come out.
I wish they would have done better.
For
comics' sake. You
top
know what I mean?
Five, I think Machine, like, they were within like $100,000 of each other opening weekend, but they did around like $5-6 million, which is still like an accomplishment. Because you're not putting, like, those movies don't have the budget they used to. So.
You better look at the budgets of those movies.
Is it really?
Yeah.
They spent like $25-30 million
each. The Machine was like 30,
Blu-ray.
40, yeah.
That's how we make our money back.
Yeah. Gotta hope for
it's
it.
Blu-ray, home media.
It's tough. I mean, if you think about it, being a movie star is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is a legit movie star. I don't know how that movie's doing.
I don't know how sex on screen does. You don't know this about me, and this belies what happened earlier, but I am like the resident person around here. If it's smut on screen, I'm the editor that they always like, let's get Jacqueline's take on it. Like, there's the comic book guy, there's the sports guy, and then there's me of like, is it dirty on screen? She will tell us whether this is actual smut or something that has an audience. And that was really disappointing to me that a sex comedy could not do well because of puritanical youth. Like, I am upset about it. This is where I'm going to get into my like comedian being like, we've gone too far.
Well,
like, this is where I will get it.
For her. My thing too is like, good for her to be like, you know,
I wanted to do this.
I want
to
do this.
I'm sure
she's still good looking. That's how it happens.
And it should. I think they should show them when they feel. But listen, Jennifer Lawrence, you're right. She did a sex comedy. And it sucks that, like, now that's going to be a cautionary tale for anybody else trying to do one.
Well, I mean, I think it's still, the jury's still out, you know. This is going to be, hopefully this is the door opening back up. So I appreciate her doing that.
Just the fact that these projects got greenlit.
Yes.
And the stars wanted to do it.
The stars doing it. So they're doing it. So now maybe Hollywood's going to go, let's see, how's it doing?
Mm-hmm.
What's the landscape right now? Because with the cancel culture and this, like, all this stuff, because it's all fake. It's not real. Like, let me tell you, it's not real, all right? And the companies that, say, have a checkered past, they're overcorrecting the most.
Yeah.
And like, in our minds, we're looking at this, and we're like, dude, if I can feel the diversity meeting when I'm watching your movie... I'm out.
So it's like you're driving on the freeway and like you go off the lane like one way and then you overcorrect.
Yes, and now I'm in the other lane.
They always teach you like
traffic's
like,
coming. You know,
yeah, well, like, handle
I'm
the
here
pressure.
For the sexual overcorrection. I want to see like I was just like every Terminator, Terminator 2. In the middle of Terminator 2, do you remember this? They like granted it's a part of the plot that like John Connor has to happen, but they don't gloss over that. We get a full on Sarah Connor re-sex scene. Like,
that's
that was
the first one.
Then the first one.
84. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they always have an excuse for that. I like that. But last night we got a handshake as the romantic moment in the movie that we saw.
Yeah, right.
It was
a
handshake.
It's like a fist bump. Yeah.
Come on.
But I will say I'm not a fan of gratuitous nudity either.
No, it's not about that.
But it's like, to me, it's just like with the people dying, it has to make sense. Service the story, you know?
Like, I have a bit about this that I talk about. It's like, because you know what I can't stand is when I see a bra in a love scene. It's unprofessional. Okay, the should be out.
It's a love scene.
You know why? It's because that's not a realistic moment. Nobody has sex like that.
Married people.
No. Nobody has their bra. Nobody has their bra.
I'm joking. I wouldn't know.
But he's got the ring.
I know.
But I always say at the end of that is like, it's not for the nudity. It's not about me being a pervert. It's artistic integrity. But listen, I don't actually need to see the
right.
You just don't want to see a bra strap.
I just need to believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
That the is out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
when
you're a kid.
Are you getting this back to Ninja Turtles?
Yes. When you're a kid, none of this matters. When you're a kid, it's just like, oh yeah,
right.
That turtle suit looks like trash, but it's fine. It's fine
because the turtle's boobs are out.
The turtle's abs.
The turtles
aren't wearing whatever you're into.
Aren't wearing any clothes.
Yeah.
This should be your favorite movie. The turtles aren't wearing clothes even when it's not a sex.
When you're 10, you're not like, Dad, Mom, the turtle, where's his pee-pee? And it's like, you don't think about that kind of stuff.
That is a good question that I forgot.
I was having
too much fun.
I don't want to forget this. Let's not forget who Donatello is in this movie.
Uh-oh.
Corey Feldman?
Corey Feldman, the one and only.
Voiced by Corey Feldman. Oh, fun pizza fact before we're out of here. So Pizza Hut had a $20 million campaign with Ninja Turtles.
I bet they did.
But it's hilarious with this movie because the pizza featured in the movie is Domino's.
Yeah.
So they didn't get in the movie, but they had the marketing around it.
Well, that's
and it was everywhere.
Placement.
We went to Pizza Hut. We bought the cassette tape coming out of our shells.
Because that was when you would go to Pizza Hut as a restaurant. It was like still a restaurant pizza with a salad bar.
And let me tell you how great you guys grow up. Here's how great the Ninja Turtle costumes were, okay? The Ninja Turtle in the movie were so good that I remember my mom told us, like, she saw a TV guide that the Ninja Turtle is going to be on Oprah today. The Ninja Turtle is going to be on Oprah. My brother and I are so excited. And she introduced, here come the turtles! And the turtles walk out, and it was different costumes that were not half as good as the movies. They had, like, liver spots and stuff on them.
They're not half as good.
It was bad. And my brother was like, who the hell is this?
These aren't the turtles!
I was furious.
Just do a placard with it said turtle across the front and letters?
Oh, we were so mad.
Letters?
And then ever since then, they don't trust black women.
So Oh my God! There it is.
That's what started it right there.
Let's get out of here.
I'm not saying
before
Oprah was
I end up losing
it,
my career. Let's get out of here.
He don't trust black women because of that, right?
Wait, before we get Oprah I end up
the
being the smiling woman in a video that goes viral on TikTok.
I have some questions. Let's go to our big close, Brian. I love all people. I love everyone. I wasn't even mad at Oprah. I was mad at the turtles. I'm not saying Oprah was it. Stephanie might have something to do with it, but not Oprah.
Look at this.
I'm just
going to
smile. So when this goes viral, it's just me sitting here.
EG, you're always welcome on the show. You're a hilarious comedian, a talented actor who will get naked if the role is right, if the part requires
it. See that.
That's why it'll happen.
It's real. It's
really real quick. That's my first season of Workaholics. I'm reading the script and there is a thing. Montez walks out of the bathroom naked. And I looked at that. I was like, wait, hold on a second.
I mean, I really want to say to this, you act like Workaholics was this. This was it. We want to make a movie about the show, about Office.
It's all,
like, it's all like every comedy show ever made is just comedians hit
a
blunt,
lot of it is
exhale
that,
idea.
But they're not making
so
those
did you
anymore.
Have to be naked on set?
That's true.
For that.
Yeah. It was
part?
Like, but they just, I had a thing on it.
You had a thing?
Yeah. The whole point was like the rule of D's.
Is that when people stop you on the street? Are they like, is Montez usually what they see?
Actually, nowadays, because of social media, it's probably 50-50.
That's good.
What's the other? Well, just social media in general.
Yeah, they'll say, oh, Eric Griffin. Somebody else will be like, Montez, you know. But
I mean, are they listening to the podcast is what I'm saying.
I just think that when you want to if you're a fan of a thing
and you're going to go look for it. Got you.
You're going to see the person's name.
Got you.
That's the one. That's one of the positives of social media.
Griffin Got with you. Griffin. You know, you on tour great. Anywhere coming up later
when
on?
When does this come out?
This summer. This will be late
27.
July. So.
Oh, well,
you got nothing set up?
I don't know what's going on in late July.
Like, this is like 2024. Like, what are we?
No. All right.
You're going
to
be around.
Jurassic Park 9 is coming out. And
do you have any movies you're excited to see this summer? Like when the year started, what was the movie you like circled? You're like, that's the one I got to see.
Man, there's nothing.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
not Oppenheimer, Barbie, nothing.
Movies have been so disappointing. Like Oppenheimer, why are we making that?
To f*** with people.
See, I don't know why we're making that. They should make, are they going to make the Hitler, the Young Years? Is that one going to come out too?
We're making it because it's coming out the same weekend as Barbie. Yeah. And it's a great dichotomy of choice.
I just sometimes not every story needs to be told.
But Barbie is, you're fine with Barbie.
No, even Barbie, like how they, like, are they, we'll find out how they're going to ruin Barbie. Because our idea of like, because there was so much controversy surrounding Barbie in the like early 2000s, late 90s, you know what I mean? Of this like
the body
image and like, you know, and then it was like, because I love that you have, I love that. But now that's cool, that's again. A new thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, and even if they had like the different color Barbies back in the day, nobody was talking about them.
Fair.
You know what I mean? They were like, they were in the closet, you know.
I think you're seeing it. I think you're seeing it opening weekend. I mean, you will have by the time this podcast comes out, yeah.
Well, my wife is probably going to be like, we got to go see Barbie. And then on the way there, we're going to be, I'm a Barbie girl.
Well, you can have the Nicki Minaj Ice Spice version because they redid it.
Oh, they did?
They did.
There you go.
I don't know if it's, I'm gonna like that.
If you good? Think they were going to make a Barbie movie and Nicki Minaj was not going to get involved in that, come on now.
Okay.
Are you Eric Griffin on the socials?
Yeah, just at Eric Griffin. Yeah. I love movies. I talk about movies too on Riffin' with Griffin a lot. You know, I'm going to be reviewing The Flash.
There you go.
Which is probably way past now since this is coming out in
2025. I think given your take on The Turtles, people are going to want to tune in to hear retroactively how you felt about
The
Flash.
I really do think so.
And any other movie you see, you're always welcome on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here.
Like, I'm interested to hear what you say about The Flash now. And I'm not interested to hear about what anybody says about anything.
We're interested to hear from our fans as well, our fresh catch-up crew. You can email us rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Subscribe, rate, review. Whatever your platform of choice asks you to do, do it for us. Here at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, and for Riffin' with Griffin. Eric Griffin,
thank you.
The best and one of the best comics you will ever see when he's in your town.
Had a good time.
Go see him. Hilarious. Jacqueline Coley, we have a TBD on our next movie, and so
we can make it up.
We could just pick anything.
I'm going to say we're doing The Secret of the Nim, and Brian has to now.
Can I tell you something? I know everything about that movie. I've never actually seen it.
What? Really?
Well, I read the books.
I read the books too, yeah.
I might have to come back for that one.
Yeah.
All right. Griffin's back for the... Yeah. He'll do the book review. Jack will do the movie. And I'll just try my best to steer the ship for the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes. I am Mark Ellis saying thank you so long and cowabunga.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.